So what we're doing today, and for the next couple of weeks, we're talking about margin in your time. The fact that so many of us are so busy and we don't have any time. And because of that, we can't do or give time to the things and people that are important to us. I don't know if you've ever done this before, but you know, I was talking with somebody who, actually, I'll just tell you, it was Ronald. I didn't ask him if I could share this or not, but I was, you know, Ronald is from Brazil originally. He plays drums often for us. And so for me, I'm just fascinated by other cultures. And so one of the things I was asking him, I just said, so what are some of the differences you see here in the U.S. compared to, you know, compared to Brazil? And he told me some things, and he goes, there's so many, I don't even know where to start. And then this came up. It wasn't one of the things he mentioned, but I was talking to him about something, and I said, it's about 18 inches. And I could tell in the look on his face, he has no idea what I meant. Because we're like the only country in the world who does inches, right? And so I said, well, it's about that far. Because for us, we know what 18 inches is. We're Americans. We're kind of like that. And it's easy as no matter what culture you are, you're used to your culture and you get to kind of thinking that we do everything best or it's just our way. But there are things we can learn from other cultures. How many of you can at least be honest about that and say yes? Okay. Something I've heard a lot about, like, you know, occasionally you'll see it hit the news, is we can learn about maybe some of our eating habits that might be better, and we can learn some things from other cultures. I know I've seen this before where they look at, you know, in general, most Japanese are pretty fit and thin. So you think, well, maybe if we adopted some of those eating habits, it would be different. You know, maybe a diet that was more fish-based and that kind of thing. And I've heard this, too, about Mediterranean diets, you know, the kind of the way they eat, maybe the olive oil, I don't know. I've heard this even about the French because you know, that for them, they have lunch, déjeuner, and then they have dinner. For them, it's called petit déjeuner, which means smaller lunch, basically. We don't do that, right? We do it the other way around. We do kind of maybe catch a fast lunch, and then we have a massive dinner, and then sit or sleep on it, and that's not healthy, right? So there's things we can learn from other cultures, but I got a culture here that we were looking into that I bet you never thought about learning from. Let me give you a picture here. This is actually a Bedouin tent in part of Jordan right next to Israel. I've never been there, but what I understand is as you're driving by, like on a tour bus or something, you might look over and see a tent like this. And you're thinking, how do people live like this in 2019? How do they live like that? I mean, look, there's no wires going to that building, right? I heard someone told me today, Janine told me her power was off for like 4 hours this morning already. And for most of us, when that happens, we're thinking, what are we going to do? Why? Well, because we got things in the refrigerator and there's internet, right? I mean, what do you do without internet? Or your sump pump. What if your sump pump? Yeah, that's right. Oh my goodness, especially with this kind of rain. Make sure it's plugged in. I went and checked and made sure mine was plugged in last night. Just because we got to know, right? I mean, how do you do it? There's no signal there. I'll bet you that even if they had a cell phone, it wouldn't work. How do they live like that? You look at that and you think, what in the world? And it looks so kind of shabby and there's no running water. There's no donuts. All those pictures of donuts, I was thinking, I mean, there's none of that. But more importantly, no barbecue. Am I right? I don't even see a grill there. Like, how can you live like that? Here's the thing, though. It's kind of interesting. If you look even then a little deeper, I just grabbed a couple pictures of Bedouin shepherds, and the reason I grabbed this picture in particular is just the lines on that man's face. He's been out in the sun a lot. Now, if I get in the sun, of course, my skin tone, my dad was a redhead, so I pay for it immediately, but it's a little different. And this grandma, see those tattoos? That's kind of typical of the Bedouin women with those tattoos on the face, and I don't know what those mean or anything. That's not even the point. But I wanted to leave that picture there because that's so different than us. The life is different. I mean, most of our ladies, you wouldn't even think about going out without some kind of maybe a sunscreen in your skincare products. And, you know, there's tons of skincare products. I mean, there's huge aisles and there's people you can, you know, buy from and personally, and there's online. And it's so different. Well, here's a true story. Because Israel's so close and there's a lot of Bedouins there, what they did is they were studying them because what they found is that most of the Bedouins were living well into their hundreds. Like past 100, that was super common. Well, how can that be? They don't have any of the luxuries of life. I mean, there's no Quick Trip. I feel funny leaving Missouri, actually, if there's no Quick Trip. You know, and I think, well, how can other people live like this with a regular gas station? I just don't understand. And it's weird because I grew up in California where you don't want to go to a bathroom in a gas station in California. It's just not even thought of. And then here, I mean, it's just so different. How do people live like that? And how do they live that long? I mean, you don't go to urgent care. There is nothing. What do? You can't call in a prescription and just, I mean, in some cases have it delivered. And now there's DoorDash and all these things. You can order any food you want and have it there in time. And how do they do that? So Israel decided, we're going to figure it out. And so they studied these people and their culture. And I read this, and I don't know if this was just being cynical or true, but they thought, we can bottle this, whatever it is, and sell it right next to the Dead Sea mud people put on their faces. And obviously, she probably didn't do that, but how does it happen? Here's what they found. The secret they found was that their life was virtually stressless. I know that sounds weird. And they studied over and over, and they kept studying these different things. What they found is that the routine of life for them is radically, radically different. For most of us, I know we looked at this a couple weeks ago, but just the idea that stress takes a toll on all of us. And it takes a toll in weird ways. But let's take a look. We're using this book by Randy Frazee called Real Simplicity, talking about it. And they did some study, and this is what the average Bedouin family's day looks like. Let me just describe it for you. The family rises from their tent right before sunrise, so they're ready to capture the precious hours of sunlight. I know there's times I love catching the sunrise. You know, and they're not always pretty, but here's the truth about sunrises. It's usually only pretty for a minute or two. It's not very long. And the longer you watch it, the more it fades, and it's just a moment. But so many people miss that. It's funny, I post those things sometimes online, and people say, thanks, I don't think I'll ever see one of those, but I'll just live through, you know, your pictures, so. For these people, though, they get up when the sun's up, and each member of the family has a job to do, and it's usually lines up with whatever their role in the family is, whether it's child or mother, father, grandfather, whatever. Some tend the sheep. It's a core business that they have. Some make clothes or prepare meals. Some mend clothes and tears in the tent or whatever. Some of them, you know, occasionally at intervals, they'll go to town and sell either, you know, lambs or wool, that kind of thing. Whatever it is, here's the key, though. They get their job done before the sun goes down. There's no artificial light to extend the day. That's it. And obviously in a tent like that, you're not just going to light a fire right there. Maybe outside, but then everybody gathers together. The father, the mother, the children, grandparents, aunts, uncles. All that family comes in together. No TV sets, no phone calls, no emails to catch up on. And each night the family gathers for dinner together. They're not in a particular hurry. I mean, why hurry? And then each evening involves 3 to 4 hours of just being together. And they talk about the day and what's happening. And, you know, they might light a fire outside and then, you know, everybody gathers around and might be music and singing and telling stories from the past. And kind of sounds like something from our past. Most of their work in the day is pretty physical, so they don't really need to squeeze in a trip to the gym, right? Or a personal trainer. I mean, they're already working out. They're tired at the end of the day, so each night they go to bed, all kind of at the same time. And imagine how quiet it is when they go to bed. I mean, short of maybe the animal sounds, it's pretty quiet. It's interesting because the sleep they sleep, they've even studied that. Their sleep is a replenishing sleep that most of us don't really experience anymore. They just don't have that hectic life. It's a beautiful simplicity that kind of goes with kind of the rhythm of what creation was about. They don't have access to money or medications because they don't need them. They don't use them. There's nowhere to spend it. It doesn't work that way. And they're not the only ones in the world who live a life like that. But so their secret is this. They approach relationships and time in a totally different manner. It's their culture. It's different, the way they look at it. It's a certain kind of community. It's a stress-free living that it's hard for us to even understand. Does anybody feel like an urge to be a Bedouin? No, I know. Probably first thing is you're thinking, I bet that sheep smells. I'm sure some of us are thinking that. Or maybe, and don't be triggered or offended, I'm just going to say it, but maybe you can't even imagine disconnecting from the World Wide Web to connect with people in your home like that. There's a thing. This is an actual thing. It hasn't quite entered into the psychology books yet, but they're actually calling it nomophobia. Here's what it means. you don't have access to your phone. Anybody ever felt this before? Like maybe you drove away and left it somewhere and then you can't remember where and you're like, oh my gosh, where is it? And that anxiety you feel because you can't reach out and call somebody and somebody can't get a hold of you and that panic feeling. Or maybe you've had this where, I mean, it happens, you know, even these modern things, they break and something doesn't work and you think, what am I going to do without a phone? I mean, they can't get me another phone for like 12 hours. Isn't it remarkable how fast they can get you a phone? I'm serious. I mean, if you've had this happen, I mean, I've had it happen where they say, well, yeah, we'll have it to you in 24 hours. Like, what? How can that even be? And it is. It's there. Like, man, that was fast. But this is an actual syndrome. They say people have this anxiety because they can't get to their phone. We're stressed out. It's just stress. And for one, a lot of us can't sleep with all the stress. And phones do play into that. We talked about that a little bit last week. Here's a study by a psychologist named Archibald Hart. He said this about American life statistics. He said about half of all American adults cannot sleep at night. 49% of American adults suffer from some sort of sleep-related problem, such as insomnia. 1 in 6 American adults suffer chronic insomnia. And this is sad, but married women suffer more than men. They think it's because their husband's snoring, but I'm not sure about that. But Archibald Hart offers this warning. He says that humans weren't designed for the lifestyle like supersonic jets. And in a nutshell, most of us are living at too fast a pace. It's a pace of modern life that is stretching all of us beyond our limits. And we are paying for this abuse in the hard and painful currency of stress and anxiety, plain and simple. And I know there's obvious things. You think about this, and I'm feeling it today, actually. My eyes are kind of tired. You guys ever feel that way? And I'm, like, talking right now. I'm thinking, maybe that's why your eyes feel tired today. And I remember my mom, she used to always say, you don't look good. I'm like, what? I remember as a kid, and she goes, are you feeling sick? Your eyes look sick. And you can tell so much in a person's eyes. That's why we work so hard to hide it, right? And to make it look like it doesn't look that way. And you might drink a little more coffee to try to perk yourself up so you don't feel the effects. And what we don't realize is that you still feel the drowsiness and the irritability. And what's really sad is studies have shown over and over the long-term effects of a lack of a good night's sleep. There's something actually that happens when you can actually sleep. Say that it leads to depression and anxiety, and those things are in epic proportions in our country today. Stress activates all kinds of illnesses. Say it plays into diabetes, high blood pressure, autoimmune diseases, hypertension, even cancer. Maybe you've noticed that when you go to the doctor now, you got to fill out those long surveys, and one of them, it asks how much you're sleeping at night and what level is your stress, and it asks you to rate your stress level, and that plays into all of that. So let me ask you a question, okay? We talked about this last week, and we talk about it a lot. Does God care about this stuff? He does. Why? Why would he care? I mean, does he really care if you're too busy? Yes, he does. He cares about that, and he cares about it for a multitude of reasons. He cares about it because he wants you to have a rich and satisfying life. It's not just about you going to heaven, but it's about you living in eternity with him starting now. And he wants that to be good. And if it affects your relationships, those are the most important things to him. Remember that whole love God, love others? It matters. It matters how you treat one another. All of that matters. And it matters to him. Let me ask you another question. Maybe you've looked and read Genesis, the very first part of it before in the creation story. Maybe you've read that and you thought, well, that's a cool story. And I love how God tells us how the world came to be. What you may not realize is that the book of Genesis, especially the creation story, was largely what we would call an apologetic, which means, apologia means a defense. What it was is Moses was establishing for everybody, you think, because the world they lived in, they had a God for the sun, a God for the moon, a God for the light, a God for dark, a God for stars, a God for every little thing. And what he was establishing, one of the things he was doing is pointing out the fact that, no, you guys, you have it wrong. There's actually one God, and he made all those things. And he set them in motion, and here's the order he did it in. So you might look at it and realize, well, wait a minute. A lot of what he did there was establishing a worldview that explained for everybody and all their neighbors what it meant to be a God, a person who follows the one true God. Because any worldview, if you're going to look at how people view the world and how they establish right and wrong and who's what, you've got to answer some basic questions. why are we here? How do we get here? What's the problem? Because we realize there's problems. And what's the solution? Every religion, I don't care if it's secular or religious, every person has to answer those questions. And they may want to ignore them, but the fact is they have to answer them. And the Bible does that, and starting in Genesis, it says there's a God who made all this. There's a God who set it in motion, and he will correct it ultimately in the person of Christ coming back, and he has a solution for those things, which is unity and relationship with his son. Something else, though, I never thought of this before. What if in addition to all of that, what God was doing is kind of giving us a guide for how we're supposed to live? I know you're thinking, wait a minute, how would that even be? You might look at it like this. He almost wrote in the beginning of Genesis kind of almost like a day planner. And most of us don't follow that system anymore. You know, we're modern people. We know how to do it right, right? But here's the concept. Here's the idea that he kind of set up how it would function. And if you look at those beginning days of creation, he starts off talking about light. And he says, then God said, let there be light. And there was light. And God said that light was good, and then he separated the light from the darkness, and God called the light day and the darkness night. And evening passed, and morning came, marking the first day. It's interesting. You know, I know how we think. We think, well, no, we know how to do this because we're modern, smart people. And a lot of times what we do is we take whatever is popular in our culture, and then we try somehow to force the Bible to fit that, rather than looking at it the other way around, that there's actually a creator of the universe who loved you, created you for relationship. And so what I think the better approach would be to say, no matter what culture is saying today, that we would say, God, how can I fit into what you say? Rather than me trying to make what the word says fit into culture. So then you got all that. And then on day 4, he separates and creates those objects of light. He says, then God said, let lights appear in the sky to separate the day from the night. Let them be signs to mark the seasons, days, and years. Let these lights in the sky shine down on the earth. And that is what happened. God made 2 great lights, the larger one to govern the day, the smaller one to govern the night. He also made the stars. God set these lights in the sky to light the earth, to govern the day and the night, and to separate light from darkness. And God saw that it was good. And evening passed and morning came, marking the 4th day. So he set all that in motion. 2 of the first 5 days of creation have something to do with light and darkness. Then he creates us. So God created human beings in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. Here's the thing. We, as human beings, we always try to create God in our image. We want a God that's not going to bother us. We want a God that's not going to correct us. We want a God that's going to line up with whatever we want and feel in the moment. But the truth is, you don't get to create him in your image. He created us in his image. What's also interesting about that, as you look at it, is there's an order to those things. What if we were actually created to conform to those light and dark cycles in a different way than what we've done in modern life? What if it's supposed to be that way? I know it sounds crazy, but look at how the days were ordered. It says right here, it says, there was evening and morning the first day. And it said it all those times. Doesn't that seem backward? That's not how we judge it, right? We don't judge it evening to morning. And maybe you know this, maybe you don't, but that's how the Jews decide what a day is. It doesn't actually start like for us, you know, we start our day at 6 a.m., but for them, they started at dusk. That's the first part of the day. And it started right back here in Genesis. They just didn't make that up. They actually got that from the Bible, and they've continued that into their normal life today. That's why if you're a Jew and you practice the Sabbath, it actually starts that evening before what we would think of at 6 p.m. Something else to think about. In their culture and the way they look at life, the first things matter. The first part of the thing matters. Firstborn, first fruits. And the same is true for their day. How many of you have seen Fiddler on the Roof? It's a light. I know it's old. Anybody seen the play? I've seen it a number of times. I never noticed this before in the opening scene. I want to show you just a little bit of the opening scene of this movie.
A fiddler on the roof. Sounds crazy, no? But here, in our little village of Anatevka, you might say every one of us is a fiddler on the roof, trying to scratch out a pleasant, simple tune without breaking his neck. It isn't easy. You may ask, why do we stay up there if it's so dangerous? Well, we stay because Anatevka is our home. And how do we keep our balance? That I can tell you in one word. Tradition!
Tradition! Tradition!
Of our traditions, we've kept our balance for many, many years. Here in Anatevka, we have traditions for everything. How to sleep, how to eat, how to work, how to wear clothes. For instance, we always keep our heads covered and always wear a little prayer shawl. This shows our constant devotion to God. You may ask, how did this tradition get started? I'll tell you. I don't know.
You know, I've seen that a lot of times. But I never caught that the sleep thing was part of their tradition. Not only that, I wouldn't have caught this either, that in the beginning of this movie, he's talking about all those traditions, but then he demonstrates this tradition. If you were to watch the rest of that, you see them hustling and bustling around, and they're on their way to get somewhere. They've got to get to somewhere really fast because the day is about to start. Not end, start. The next day is about to start. And what it is, he's on his way home for family dinner. That's where he's headed to. And that's how they work it. That's the first thing that starts the day for them. It's something that they do together. For most of us as Americans, we start a day in the morning, and we don't even think about it, but that's because for us, work is the most important thing. But for them, the first part of the day is the thing they invest in, and it's actually dinner. It looks kind of like this. It's kind of different than the way we see it. For them, 6 p.m. starts, and that's home for relationships. If you think about it, here's how they work it. From 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., that's when they get all their work done. It's about half the day. Then from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m., that ends up being about relationship. They put all their work aside and then spend time together, relating to one another, relaxing. Then, I know this is going to be really radical for some of you, then they go to bed and get 8 hours sleep. I know, that's crazy. And in fact, they do this every day except on the Sabbath, which is the seventh day, and they're supposed to rest completely from work even on that day. So let's think about that. Would God even care about that? Does it really matter? Is it really a tradition that he wanted us to follow? And I know we're not Jews and we're not bound to the Old Testament laws. I get all that. What I'm saying is maybe we could learn something from them that we have forgotten and maybe actually change some of what we do. Think about this for just a minute with me. What if we actually did get all of our work done before six? And we actually left work at work? What if we did that? And you might say, well, I can't get it all done. I don't have time. Well, then you might have to deal with the idea then, well, what are your priorities? I mean, what matters more? Is it really the relationships and family and listening and developing a culture with your family and hearing about each other's day and finding out, you know, what's going on and how people are doing and what happened at school and home and work, and maybe it was sports or something else? Is that more important, or is it more about work and ambition and status and those things? Let me share a couple quotes with you. No amount of money or success can take the place of time spent with your family. Your children only get one childhood, make it memorable. I heard this a few years ago, and it just blows my mind how true it is. When you're in the middle of those days, and many of us can remember, and we host a MOPS group here, and I'm so grateful for that. You know, Ashley Fitzpatrick and some others do that, and it's an amazing thing. But I see these moms come in, and they've got these little kids, and it's a tough time of life. Do you remember those days? Remember those days? Just kidding. I'm looking at the high school students, middle school students. It's tough. Those are tough days, and they seem to last forever, and you think, is this day ever going to end? Those do go slow. But then the years fly by, and pretty soon, you've got a daughter in college and a son in college, and you don't see them. Life changes. At the end of your life, you'll never regret not having passed one more test, not winning one more verdict, not closing one more deal, but you will regret the time not spent with a husband or a friend or a child or a parent. You probably heard this too. Kids spell love T-I-M-E. It's just the truth. It's just the truth. And I believe God cares about that because he cares about your relationships. The whole reason he made you was for relationship. And then he tied his relationship with you to your relationship with others. That's why when he said, you know, the most important commandment is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul, then Jesus quickly said, and the second is like unto it, to love your neighbor as yourself. Those relationships matter to him. However you define your success, I hope you define it mostly by time spent with your family and the relationship. But most of us don't have time because we're running on empty. I mean, we're busy. You know what it reminded me of? This is kind of a goofy example, but years ago, we needed a vacuum at the church I was working at, and so I just ran over to Walmart and got a vacuum. You know how long that vacuum lasted? It was a good vacuum. It would have been a great vacuum for any of our homes, but it wasn't made for church. It wasn't made to be run for hours and hours on end, and it wasn't made to be emptied and ran and emptied and ran and the cord out and out. And you know why? Because they make vacuums for that, commercial vacuums, and I might say it like this, that most of us in our lives were running harder than we're supposed to run. We weren't really created to do that, and it takes a toll. There's actually science behind all that. You may not realize this, but the more time you expend, you kind of put your body into this simulated stress. In fact, that's what caffeine does, and believe me, I love coffee, and I'm going to still drink it, but it does put that caffeine in there that simulates stress. And then what stress does is it produces all these other chemicals in your body that aren't healthy for you. You weren't intended to be like that. It wasn't made to be like that. That extra high adrenaline and the overextension and the stress, it actually depletes your brain's natural processes and tranquilizers that are supposed to be there to calm you and to let you sleep and relax and communicate. That's why God built in that whole Sabbath thing. But more importantly, let me just ask, do you make time for recreation? I saw someone do this once with this word. They did it like this. It's recreation. God actually designed you to recreate on a regular basis, for you to take time and to relax and stop and slow down. At one point, Jesus even said, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. It's actually for us. It's for your good. So I have a challenge for you. Here's a challenge. I know for some of you are like, okay, that's great, Pastor, but I can't do any of that. It's not going to work for my family. I need this. I've got these bills. I got this. I get it. I understand. But here's the thing. God wants you to have an abundant life, and he wants you to have healthy, growing, vibrant relationships. He wants you to enjoy that. Right there in the first few opening lines of the Bible, he kind of laid it out that way. That you're supposed to do that. That family relationships, connectedness, health are all the priority. So here's what I'm going to challenge you to do. I'm going to actually challenge you to consider your schedule and see if it in any way lines up with what we've been talking about today. If there's anything that you might need to change, and maybe you don't do it alone. Maybe it's something you talk about with your family, your spouse, or good friends of yours. Sometimes our friends can see it clearer than we can. And if you're willing and you want to take the risk and you can just ask them, hey, take a look. Do you think I should make some changes? It's kind of a scary thing, isn't it? Nobody likes to do that. Nobody likes it when it's someone else's idea. I'm going to ask you to do this. I'm going to ask you to spend some time this weekend on home improvement. Actually improving your home life. I read this, it's convicting. It says, your cell phone has already replaced your flashlight, watch, alarm clock, and calendar, Don't let it replace your family. I want you to decide to create margin in your time for your family, for your own life. So you're ready to close. Just a little update on those Bedouins we looked at. Like a lot of times, remember Ronald Reagan, he said, the scariest thing you can hear is we're the government, we're here to help. So the Israeli government thought, we need to improve these people's lives. So they urbanized a lot of them. They brought them electricity, internet, modern transportation. Guess what? Their life expectancy matches ours now. It's interesting. I want you to shut your eyes for a second. I know some of you, it's kind of challenging. You feel like, Pastor, you're kind of meddling in my life. I know. To be honest, God meddles in mine on a regular basis, and I just thought I'd share. It comes down to this, though. You get to choose all this. At the end of your life, do you want to look back, and what do you want to have to show for it? What really, really, really matters? That's really the question.